these rushes, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I like the rushes.
Hi, this is John Costa, and I'm here with the alienated academic himself, Professor Richard Hall. How are you?
I'm all right. It's wet and windy, isn't it? It's horrible out there.
Yeah, it keeps going dark. Strange orange hue this morning.
It was. What was that all about?
It reminded me, I said to my colleague, it reminded me of the Icelandic volcano when the
2010,
when all the planes were landed.
All got grounded.
Yeah.
I thought like the weather was definitely April showers, wasn't it? It felt like April. And I noticed that
you could see it coming as well, couldn't you?
Yeah.
In the sky,
things are budding up in the garden, right? The magnolia, a little potted magnolia, a little potted Stella magnolia. That's budding up. I'm not very happy about that, yeah. You know. And so I know what's going on. It's crazy, but that orange hue in the sky. I thought it's like a Ming the Merciless thing was happening.
Very much.
I did wonder, you know, and then I thought to myself, it'd be all right. It's, you know, I think the sun's going to come out, and then I stepped out the door and got soaked.
There you go.
I was properly alienated.
But I don't think you were the only academic that got wet. So
no,
you
that
would have been alienated if everyone had been lined up. And
yeah. We were all.
Who's got wet socks? So Wednesday, tell me a little bit about Wednesday. Looking forward to it?
I think so. It's always that thing, isn't it? You know, you're having a bit of jibber jabber with your friends about a thing. And part of the issue is that I've kind of, and I'm back to a thing that my mate Michael once said to me after I was talking through the book, and he sort of said, who's this for, Richard? And I said, it's for me.
Good question.
It's for me, you know, and he was going, no, it's not. You want to change the world with it, don't you? And I was thinking, no, I haven't got that much power, agency. I haven't got that bigger ego, really, you know. But then you come back to the point of, well, why then am I going to be in 2 days' time sitting in front of 40-odd of my friends and colleagues and compadres, you know, and so why? I don't know, really. It's a celebration of the thing, isn't it? But it's a celebration of our process, isn't it? And the thing, the book is just like it's a way station, a way marker, isn't it, on the way, really? So, you know.
Well, I was thinking about it as well for the last couple of weeks, actually, just thinking about the event and stuff like that. And probably my own role in it as well, as in, you know, not considering myself a lecturer and not having a degree and teaching here as an industry practitioner, and people going like, well, you are a lecturer, you are an academic, and all that. So, so if it's an alienated academic, it's just like, how do you feel alienated sitting in amongst academics, as in what's the difference and stuff. And I've thought about it very much about the looking at it more of sort of a holistically as a sector, you know, and how academics are kind of constantly challenged now as experts in the media when someone's got 11 million followers on Instagram as an influencer. Why is what they think more important than an academic? So I kind of came here as academics can be quite alienated at the moment, as in why people sort of, you know, the role they play, are they experts and that kind of stuff, why should we believe them? It's more about, you know, who do you trust rather than who's telling the truth sometimes. Who do you trust to tell you the truth?
Yeah.
And then you've also got that sort of maybe academics within the way the sector's changing and how it's approached, with this sort of going down the road of sort of, you know, MOOCs and sort of, you know, everyone's able to learn online, and, you know, what's the value of education when it's 9,250. And then I think also, I've always liked this theory of the 10th man, you know what I mean? When everyone else agrees, then the 10th person has to turn around and go, well, I disagree. And maybe what it is with the book, it's more a case of just putting it out there as a marker, as you said, and just saying, well, actually, are we alienated academics? Everyone's like, whoosh, shh, can't say things like that. maybe it's just something that people leave there and it's sort of screaming at them from the coffee table in the staff room, almost.
I think it's going to be it's interesting.
Are we alienated?
Yeah, it's interesting in that as well. That kind of, because of the idea, the political positioning of it, because it's part of a Marxism and education series, you know. So like, the people get put off straight away because it's got the M word in it, you know. So actually, what's your level of expertise then in that? Because we all of our expertise is fetishized, isn't it? It's this form of expertise in this area, you know, and what impact does it have, and is it excellent, and can we mark it, and can we grade it, and all of that. So there's a discourse that wraps around it, you know, but then underneath that there are different kind of, there's a whole range of different political kind of conceptions, aren't there, and ways of sort of framing it. And this thing, you are right, in that kind of 10th person sort of narrative, you know, it is a kind of a, I suppose it is there as a bit of a, it's like, you know, you're lobbing something into a room and sort of. It's a bit like, well, the emperor's got no clothes or
whatever.
Well,
it was quite interesting, I think, over the weekend as well. I don't know if you retweeted it or commented on it, about, there was an article about our academics being put into competition with each other.
Mm.
And I think there's also that sort of, you know, being charged to access your own information, you know, once you've done it.
So, oh, yeah. So, from various publishing houses.
I think there's a wider issue around the alienation of academics by the sector. Now, whether that's through sort of, you know, management of universities, the government's approach to education, through to the Russell Group, through to, you know, the monetization of services, right through to the way academic houses treat us, I don't know. But also, I think, you know, what's the role of the academic in looking at themselves, in allowing not only to get as far as it had, but to this point, you know, where...
Well, I think, I think it's an interesting one, because then you kind of...
Has there been a sort of academics all in this together, we need to push back against it,
don't exist, does it?
Our pensions, but also
don't exist. There's too much status involved, you know, and there's too much that people haven't been proletarianized enough. Yeah. So there's still,
and if you,
still
and
a
if
world to lose, right? People have still got too much to lose on an individual basis.
And if you're measured, or whether you're KPI'd against things like, you know, are you publishing? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? There's also that kind of, I've got to not rock the boat, I've got to get on and do that. I suppose that's where things like, you know, TEFs and refs come in as well.
Judged is the right word.
Yeah.
Judged is definitely the right word. And the problem is that you internalise the judging as well. You know, we're always judging each other and we're always judging ourselves. Not productive enough, you know, not competitive enough, not impactful enough, not excellent enough. You know, it's on not in a way that's kind of reflexive, in a kind of, you know, like it is when you like, well, I get this all the time when I'm teaching these first years on a Tuesday. It's just kind of, did that go well? Didn't it go well? You know, it's always, you're always reflecting on your position, who was included, who wasn't, who spoke, who didn't, can you sense check the room to work out who's conceptually grasped stuff and who hasn't? No, you know, not in that way, not in a way that you would want to do with your, you know, your media prod students and I would be doing in education. It's just kind of a constant, oh my God, am I good enough based on some yardstick you can never attain to? You know, you can never attain that mode of perfection that they want from you, being constantly productive all of the time. So you kind of get divorced from the problem with academia is it enforces this kind of ongoing, everyday, moment by moment, divorce of yourself divorce of your kind of work from yourself and your identity from yourself and the essence of what it means to be you, because you always want to sell yourself over and over again, you know, either in terms of the labour process or, like you say, because you're in competition over that journal article or that bit of knowledge exchange or that bit of knowledge transfer or whatever it might be.
I was having a conversation with the students about value for money and attendance.
Oh yeah, it's all value for money.
So I said, right, so if we kind of come at it from a value for money, as in you're getting value for money out of me for your 9,250 quid, I said, surely I'm here as an industry practitioner, so therefore it's not so much the value of my PowerPoint presentation, it's the value of what comes out of my mouth and how I make it real, how I bring it alive, the connection, that critical thinking, communication, creativity, collaboration, all the things you need to know. You know where all the information is, you can find it yourself. You know, it's I'm bringing it alive. You know, who do you trust? What's correct? What's important? What's not important? What to focus on first? Maybe focus on second. I said, so I'm bringing all that industry stuff alive. I said, so if I'm giving that every time I stand up in front of you in a lecture in a lab, if there was a box at the front, so at the end of the time, you walked up and there was a red button and a green button, which is pay him, don't pay him. I said, then I'm happy to be judged on that basis, yeah? I said, but you've also got to be here and in attendance and meeting me halfway by trying to get the stuff out of my head and asking me those questions and then responding to what I'm saying. So do I have a red and a green button, which is just like, well, I don't want your money. So we had this really interesting conversation about if we're going to value something, that value has to be met halfway, which is if I'm going to stand up the front and open my mouth and invest me and everything that I've been about and everything that I've done in the world for 52 years, and I'm going to bring that every day for 24 weeks, I'm going to bring that, and even if I'm not up for it, I step into my version of myself, yeah? Well, you need to turn up. Because if you're not, you're doing the work, yeah, but you're not understanding why you're doing it.
There is a
silence.
Yeah.
And then of course they all got a little bit fiery up about it, which was great because the idea was, it's just, but I'm saying to you, value what you know before you turn up, and then I'll wrap the course around you so I can give you all a bespoke learning opportunity based on the fact that that's the great thing about the course.
But we don't have any meaningful kind of discussion, do we, at the level of society about what we mean by value? You know, and my understanding of that is emerges from kind of labour theory of value, you know, so the value that labour brings to the kind of process of production and that then expands the world of capital, which I want to annihilate. You know, we don't have any mean from that perspective right the way through to, well, what the hell do the Office for Students mean by value for money? Yeah, absolutely. You know, but part of the issue there is that we reduce things to a discussion about money and we reduce things to a discussion rather than humanity and we discuss things in a very individualized way. The Office for Students, it's all about, you know, sort of the individual student and what the student and her family or carers will get from this investment. You know, there is no sense within that this is a collective endeavor. And that's part of the problem, isn't it? If we talk about the other half of the, because on the, if we come back to one of our starting points here about whether I'm looking forward to Wednesday or not, on the one hand, you're kind of discussing the political economics of the labour process and what it means to work as an academic and to produce knowledge. And on the other half, what does it therefore mean as part of that, which comes out of Marx's early writings, what does it mean to exist as an academic and how estranged are you from yourself, but also from your peers? So if we're having a discussion, the discussion's wholly framed by, effectively, the relationship between the institution and the individual student, and there's no sense of a collective in there, and staff are ignored, or they're marginalised, or they're measured, or they're judged, or they're punished. All of that kind of stuff. There's no sense. We try in our classrooms to have that conversation about us as a scholarly community, staff and students together, you know, working together. But the discourse, the parameters are not framed in that way. Is it of it being a collective endeavour? It's always you. If you go and you invest, you know, you pick up your loan and you invest your loan in this space, this is the positional good you will get as an individual, as a productive or non-productive. So all of our conception of value gets framed in that way, and we have no sense of what does it mean then to flip that and say, screw value, not interested in value in your conception. I'm interested in the idea of building a common wealth, you know, wealth as opposed to value, a much more humanist approach to that. You know, we'll maybe solve it on Wednesday. That'll be good, won't it?
Then threw it back at the students. I mean, picking up what you're saying there and adding it to my point was that suddenly it became less about them turning up to engage with me and that industry practitioner and me valuing what they know. It's the fact that they should be, you know, questioning why each other aren't turning up and turning around and saying, well, if there's only 10 of us in the session, you know, we only really truly get value out of it if all 10 of us turn up and engage in the process. Why? Because then we're all bringing what we know by valuing it to the party to then turn around and say, well, just because I'm in the first year doesn't mean I don't know anything.
It's a commonwealth, right?
Yeah, so a commonwealth. I quite
if there's
like that.
If there's 10 of you in the room, if there's 11 of you in the room, yeah, right? Yeah. It's a kind of commonwealth, isn't it? You know, because you've got a collective endeavour, isn't it? Yeah. And that's part of the problem, isn't it? Because we see it as a very individualised thing. Well, if you don't show up, we might send you a letter, but, you know, you don't show up, you don't show up. Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking, if you don't show up, that damages us all, because this is we're an ensemble and we fulfil different roles in different moments, you know, throughout. This is a process, and it's a process in which we're all becoming. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all in a continual process of becoming, and I become myself because you become yourself, and you force me to reflect on who I am and all of that. Well, if half of us duck out, then how does that work?
Because the measuring between the peers, if there's going to be there's a measuring between academics, and the measuring between the peers is, well, actually, their collective is the fact that they're all 18, or they're all first years, or they're all international students, or whatever. So there'll be connections that they have amongst their peers. You know, it's not just that they turn up for that session, it's the fact that they've all got something to offer. And it's really interesting that we don't really think about the academic and the student's interaction, but we don't think about selling, inverted commas, with a small s, the value of students attending in the fact of their own learning and those around them. So I love that whole kind of commonwealth kind of concept as well, because at the end of the day, we rely far too much, particularly, say, social media as well, on, oh, this person tells the truth. Well, that person only tells the truth because you trust them. And if you don't know that you can trust them, and if you've never met them, how do you then know that they're telling the truth? Completely different.
Well, the problem, I suppose the problem is that the truth is the academic's truth in relation to the assessment, which is the thing that gets you the certificate at the end, which is the thing that gets you the 5% higher wage than your peers who didn't go to university. But you're dead right that actually that just enforces a kind of an ongoing commodification of the entire space. And
but then
and,
you know the facts, you don't understand what.
Yeah, and so, well, yeah, and you know, whatever the facts are, you know, the facts are constructed in a particular way, in a sort of particular totalizing system, you know. So part of it is it possible within this space that we're in, this university space, is it possible to resist that ongoing process of commodification that distances individuals from each other and from themselves and reinforces specific narratives? Or is it, do we give it up because it's a hopeless space and actually the only meaningful way in which we can change the world and engage with crises, you know, of climate or whatever it might be, is outside the university, is by somehow liberating knowledge and skills and capacities and capabilities from inside to the outside and the outside to the inside and dissolving the lot and, you know, kind of recombining to do something different. I don't know, but I wonder whether the university we've constructed will enable us to deal with those issues precisely because it's because it has to commodify all those interactions, all the knowledge, it has to commodify around issues to do with impact. You know, it perpetuates ideas of excellence which talk about there being a truth rather than there being possibly many different truths.
Versions,
and all of that.
So closing the loop on my first question, are you looking forward to Wednesday?
Probably. I'll tell you
because for 17 minutes and 23 seconds, I'm not sure you necessarily answered that question.
No, I haven't. I'm looking forward to seeing my friends and comrades. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing some people I haven't seen for a while. I'm looking forward to being... I'm glad it's a conversation with Sarah because Sarah Amsler from Nottingham, because she was the person who... She first read the draft and she first engaged with it and she provided me with loads of kind of critical feedback, you know. So I'm really pleased it's with her. She brings a lovely kind of critical, radical, pedagogic kind of connection with the work as well. So, and you know, and that's what I'm trying to sort of engage with. So I'm looking forward to that. There'll be some wine. That's nice.
Anyone who knows you, is this the kind of book that we would be expecting you to write?
Well, it's very theoretical, so yeah.
Well, you've lost me then.
Fibber.
Make it street, mate. Right.
No, well, that's one conversation I had with Sarah this morning was about not losing the people in the audience because you're applying a particular, you know, narrative, discourse, way of speaking, way of listening, way of hearing. So you can't hear people and they can't hear you, right? Yeah. So I think I'm looking forward to testing myself around that as well. It's just nice, isn't it, to be able to celebrate that thing. I mean, one of the things about publishing it was, like, it felt liberatory because it was like, you know, your ability to sustain an argument over 70,000 words is important, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, academia wants you to produce little short things. It wants it wants journal articles, peer-reviewed journal articles, really, you know.
Academic sound bites.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas this, I think, is quite... you want to stop and breathe after it. And I poured, and I suppose, yeah, if people know me, they know that there are reasons why I'm talking about alienation, that, you know, my sort of acknowledgements talk about therapy and academic work and the practice of my life and all of that, you know what I mean? So if you know me, you can understand why I'm speaking about these issues and tropes. Mm. And I'm trying to, and really, to come back to my mate Michael's question about who's it for, well, it is for me, in large part, because I'm trying to understand, it's my way of trying to understand the world, you know, and that's why it's kind of theoretical before you can get into the practical, you know.
So Wednesday's an invitation down your own rabbit hole.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you though, are you looking for it
Wednesday, I'm washing my hair. I am actually, but the thing is, I always see it as a way of challenging myself, not about trying to understand it all, but understanding any of it.
I think in that way,
as in, you know, sometimes I remember your first inaugural professorial lecture. Which was all very, very, it was very important, wasn't it? I was very, very sort of posh and grown up. I remember thinking how kind of good it was to be there.
Yeah.
Or just the knowledge in the room. Good grief, you know.
Yeah,
if that boat had gone down, how much knowledge would have been lost to the world? I can think about that. So I think it's more about just trying to. I sometimes realise I know more than I realise.
Yeah.
I just don't explain it in the way that someone would there.
Yeah.
And then that probably helps me understand why people then attracted to me and like me involved in their projects, because it keeps, I don't know if it keeps them grounded and I kind of work out whether
it
can be understood.
It is absolutely, you know, sort of dialectical. It's absolutely, it's a flow, isn't it? It's about practice, but it's a flow between the theory and the practice all the time.
Yeah, and as a practitioner, all the time. For me, it's... you know, one feeds the other.
But we've been doing this. I was thinking about this earlier on, because I was thinking about you bringing the microphones over and stuff, you know, earlier. And I was sort of thinking, God, I was trying to think, when was the first time like we met? Because we like, obviously...
I'll tell you when it was.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. It was upstairs in the Coffee Republic.
Oh, yeah, Third University.
With Jennifer Jones.
Yeah, discussion. Yeah. Of course it was. Yeah. that was interesting, wasn't it?
And you sat there all kind of like mean and moody, like with a tweed jacket on with like leather patches on the elbows. And I was like, who is that geezer over there?
Yeah, what an idiot he is.
And it turned out there it was like some like mover and shaker and doer from DMU that was doing something in Lincoln, and I'd heard about Lincoln as well.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Because
be 8, 9, 10 years ago, at least.
A decade, I'd say. Because it was around the time of the... it would be about 9, wouldn't it? Because it would be around the time of the Brown Review, you know.
2009,
and
we were,
all the protests and demos and stuff. Yeah. And then I remember we were on the same anti-EDL demo, weren't we? You were doing the reportage stuff.
Yeah, with 7 volunteers.
And I was being kettled by the police on the other side. Do you know what I mean? They were doing... You know, and they were like...
I think we just kind of bounced along from there, and that's when you took a keen interest and been, you know, a great supporter of the Citizen's Eye and
the doc media stuff,
community engagement and citizen journalism and what I've been trying to do with the doc media. So,
cool.
Looking forward to it.
It's going to be good. Right, thank you.
You're very welcome, mate.